I think you're good. Let her rip.
Let me get my water.
I do not have a phone with me to keep track of my time, so if you want to start signaling me when it's time to cut it, just let me know. I am Raquel, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm just going to go real briefly through my little resume, what I call my sobriety date. It is January 1st, 2013. My home group is the 12 and 12. That meets on Wednesday. It is a close meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do have a sponsor, and I do sponsor other women right now, just one, which I'm very thankful for. And I have a couple of little jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a part of the special events committee that keeps me busy, and especially this time of the year, and also intergroup rep for my home group. I love the way that the introduction was read from more about alcoholism, because that that particular section right there is just so true to, you know, what I tried to do during my drinking career. I'm a little nervous, so just bear with me for just a minute. So I'm going to start a little bit of what it was like, you know, and what happened, and what it's like now. And so I understand today that growing up in the environment that I grew up has nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. But as I try to relate some of the events, it would help us to kind of, you know, relate why was it that I really believe that I could control my drinking and live in that life of denial that I lived for so many years. So I come from an alcoholic family. My father was, alcoholism was very rampant in our family. By the time I came around, which is, I'm number 8 out of 9, my father was pretty much out of the house. So it was, you know, he would come in and out, but most of the time he would be out. And by the time I was 10 years old, he was pretty much gone. Him and my mother separated just because she had had enough. So what I remember as a child in my first memories was just growing up with the understanding of what alcoholism can create in a family. And so there was always a lot of fear, a lot of anger, and it was a lot of chaos. So at a very early age, I learned really quickly how to run away from the environment that I lived in. And I grew up in a small town in Mexico. And, you know, we knew all our neighbors. So for me, it was really easy to just kind of escape and hang out with the neighbor families. It was safe for me, and it was a place where I could just be away from the home environment. So pretty much what I remember from my siblings was Raquel was just a little bit different than most. You know, she was a little angry, and she was snub, and we just don't know about her. She's just a little bit different than the rest of the family. And, you know, so I grew up with that. And really early, I knew that. And I do remember having those angry episodes, especially around my younger sibling, which I think he came to take my place. I was booted out. So my first experience with alcohol was when I was 11 years old. And we had come to visit my brother in California. And we were all together, except for my father. And, you know, they're older. They're probably about 13, 15 years older than I am. And so they already have, you know, the party life, and they're already experiencing their life with alcohol. And I remember clearly just sitting in that corner, pouty and irritated and just really put out by, you know, the environment that I was in. I was just not comfortable being around. And one of my brothers decided to go to my mother and ask if I could have a margarita. And my mother said yes. And I took this drink, and I just remember what it did for me, you know? And it changed my whole environment. The people that I was around, they all became my family for the first time, and I loved them all, you know? I was comfortable in my own skin, and I could relax, and I could just be part of, for the first time, being around my family. So that was my first experience with alcohol. And so, you know, the whole idea that I had before that alcohol was bad, mm-hmm. and the idea that I had built in my head that I am just never going to touch this poison because of what it creates, it just completely went out the window. You know, how can something so powerful and that makes me feel the way that it did could be bad, you know? I'm not thinking that, but I have known what it has done to me. So I don't have another experience like that for just a couple more occasions, and it happened to be, you know, around family. Because my family drank all the time, you know. I'm from a family of alcoholics, and that's what we do. And there's, you know, that's, there's nothing different, but I can tell you that I was always looking for something different. So the second time that I remember having that episode was with one of my brothers, and I'm just a little bit older. And by this time, we have moved from Mexico to Northern California. And I remember going to visit him, and he was getting ready to go to a basketball game. And he was drinking, and he offered me a drink. It was a vodka tonic, which came to be one of my favorite drinks. Well, all of them were my favorite. But this one in particular, I thought it was really incredible. So he gave me a drink, and I could just not wait for him to leave. Oh, by the way, the first time that I drank, I did drink until I woke up the next day, and I don't remember what happened. So of course, it was my first blackout and my first drunk. So this time it was the same thing. I couldn't wait for my brother to go. And I did get into his stash. I don't know how much I drank, but once again, I passed out because of the amount that I took. So, you know, it's not for me, my story is that I didn't continuously, you know, just I couldn't wait to do it again. I didn't have that kind of thinking that I hear happens to a lot of that are in the rooms, but for me, it was just the opportunities when they were just, you know, I would go full blown. When I was in high school and came to the United States with no, I did not know how to speak English. I didn't know a word of English except for hi, hello, how are you, what's your name? And so I went to a high school, and it was just a, you know, moving from an environment that you've grown up into a new one, it was really, the transition was very difficult, especially with, you know, not knowing how to communicate. So, you know, later on, probably about a year and a half later, you know, I started to kind of seek out and make friends. You know, and I always look for the ones that are kind of like sneaking in the back of the room and talking and, you know, creating problems. And so I was introduced to something else other than alcohol, and you know, it was the same thing. This experience is a little bit different. I did not like it, and I told myself I would not do it again. And so, and I would not touch that again for a little while. And just real quick, so I get out of high school. I go to live with my brother because, you know, I'm always in that place where I am not comfortable, I'm irritable, and I'm restless. So I went to live with my brother because my mom is on my back, and she's telling me how to live my life. And she's, you know, not liking my behaviors, and she's not liking the people that I'm hanging out with. So I try to, you know, speak my mind, and in my home, you know, you don't speak back to your mom. Ever, and if you do, something will come flying across the room, and if you're close enough, you'll get slapped. And so, for me, it was really easy to just, my brother offered for me to come to stay with him, and I did that. And this was just right out of high school. You know, the family that I did not want to be around, I'm now welcome. I feel welcome because I'm partying with them, you know. I'm comfortable with them once again. And my drinking starts to happen more gradually. So at this time, there's nothing about controlling. So anytime that I get some on me, I just go for it. So by the time a year rolls around, probably in 87, October of 87, I'm already giving birth to a baby, I'm already married, you know, and it just happens because I'm running wild and I get pregnant, and then I'm thinking that if I really want to do the right thing, so marrying this guy that I really don't know much about is going to be the solution, because now I can start my new family and I can create this idea of the family that I wanted. And that only lasted about a year. So I also knew that if this guy did not work, that he was going to be out of my house right away. And he did, you know, he was. I had no, I was self-centered and selfish, you know, just like the big book talks about. And I never considered that my daughter would be affected by this, or that this man would be affected by not having his daughter around. So that happened, and it was wild for me to just going, you know, a lot of the stuff that I talk about today is things that I have been able to go and look at through doing inventories, because prior to a lot of the events that have taken up into now, I just don't really even think about any of that stuff. You know, it was not in the back of my mind that something that I had been affected by, you know, because of, you know, my behaviors. And then, you know, alcohol does not make things better. It makes it better, but it just numbs, you know, all that stuff that we continue to just fill ourselves with. So, I have had this relationship in high school with this, you know, my high school sweetheart, and we had broken up. And then I reunited with him after my daughter's dad left. And so I jumped back into that relationship, and mind you, my daughter is 2 years old. And when I jump into this new relationship with this guy, I just go back into it, you know. I go back to the drinking and not considering that my daughter needs me and that I need to be a responsible parent to her. So once again, I run wild, and this guy, you know, we end up partying. And it escalates. And I get to that point And this is important for me because it'll be part of what helps me come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to that point of our drinking where, for me, I start to look at his drinking and thinking, you know, this guy is drinking a little too much, and I don't really know if I want to make a life with him because, I don't want to have the same kind of life my mother had. And so I start to get on him to quit, to just like, we can't continue to do this. Can you please kind of ease it up? Because, it's creating problems and I really don't want to have this. And, but we continue. I continue to drink myself. And somewhere along the line, a little bit down the road, I decide, I quit drinking, right? And this is probably about, I want to say 6 to 8 months good spree of drinking, so where I'm drinking every day. And so I want to quit drink, I stop drinking. And I do not know that I suffer from alcoholism. And so when I take my drink, you take the drink away, I have the propensity to have VTs and go into the delirium state. And I did, I start to act very weird. I start to feel very out of place. I go mostly into almost like a psychosis state because at this point, I do not know anything about alcoholism. And so I create a lot of problems because my family see me sick this way and they have no idea what is happening to me. And I end up in the hospital. The doctors want to know what is going on with me. And I don't know, I don't know what's going on with me. And I go through the DTs and, if you have never experienced DTs, I hope that you never do, because now they have, rehab and detox rooms where they've always had them. I just did not know that that's what I needed. And I get through that state, but my mind is completely foggy and messed up. This guy that I had been with, he gets kicked out of the house. My family tells him to never come back, and he doesn't come back. And so I go and see one of my brothers, one of my older brothers, who has had an experience with another sibling who had gone through the withdrawals of heroin. And he recognized the symptoms, and he confronted me with that. And he said, Raquel, what kind of drugs are you using and what have you been doing? And I tell him, I did not, it has nothing to do with alcohol. It has nothing to do with drugs. This is a total breakdown that I've had. And the reason why I called it a breakdown at that point is because through that process that I went through, I had a lot of shame and guilt that I had been carrying with me. And through that process of some of that stuff resurfacing, some memories of childhood that happened to me when I was a little girl came back. So all of that, and living with the guilt that I had divorced this guy, and divorce was a big no-no in my family, and in my, the faith that I grew up in. And so I refer it to being a breakdown and nothing to do with alcoholism or, drug addiction. So that happens. My family take care of me the best that they can. And they nurse me back to health. I go to work with my brothers and they watch over me, and they love me, they love me. They don't know what's going on with me, but they're gonna take care of their little sister. And they did. And you know, it doesn't take very long, but another year later, I somehow or another, I reunite with this guy, you know, again. And so, you know, this is what we do, you know, we continue to seek out these relationships. And so this time, I'm more serious, you know, we pick it up where we left off. You know, this is just the way of it, of alcoholism. We pick up, you know, the insanity of it, you know, like the Jaywalker story, you know, the insanity of it all. And down the road, you know, when it starts to get a little bit heavy and kind of scary, I say, you know, I think it's time that you quit drinking again. And so, and this time, something happens. I don't go through that process of the DT, because I have not picked up my drinking the way that I had. I don't know what it was that it did not put me in that place again. So we make a commitment. Anyways, he was trying, I gave him the ultimatum. Either you stay or you go, but you cannot be coming back in, you know, in and out of our lives. This is just not gonna happen. So he stays. And so we decided that, one, we are going to get married, we are not going to drink, and we are going to raise our family, you know, in a good, loving Christian home. So, you know, that was my dream, and that was my goal, and, you know, and we're not going to divorce no matter what, and this is the promise that we made. So we do that, and before we get married, he comes, and we quit drinking, like, a little bit before the marriage, like, maybe a month. So he comes back 2 weeks before we get married, and a little bit before that, he says, I joined the Army, I'm going to become an Airborne Ranger, and I am going to go to Fort Eustis, and we have to get married. And I said, okay, let's do it. You know, I mean, I have no thought at all as to, you know, that I wouldn't do that now. You know, I wouldn't jump into that kind of compulsive decision like that. So my daughter at this time is about 4 years old, and we do get married, and then we end up going to Washington State, and we quit drinking. And you know, I at that point, my obsession and my whole life evolves around this family and doing the right thing. So I'm not missing anything. You know, my obsessive or my thinking that, you know, alcohol, you know, we put it away and it was not there. So about 6 months later, we moved to Washington State and away from my family and away from everybody that we know into a new environment. That woman, you know, that girl that was angry and restless and discontent and completely sick before I started drinking, kind of shows up again. And I don't know what happens, and I get very mad at things, you know, just everything is irritable, and I take it out on my daughter some of those times. So I, you know, I communicate with my husband, and I keep telling him, I'm such a bad mother. You know, how can anybody behave this way? And he assured me that I was a great mom, a good wife, and mind you, all this time he's deployed. So he doesn't see part of this person, you know? And so, but he starts to experience that a little bit later, you know. And it's not very long after that that some of those behaviors of the passive aggressive, you know, that angry, restless, and discontent that shows up. And we go to an event a year later after he joined the service, and it's a big, you know, big to-do. Everybody's dressed up in their gowns, and the guys are dressed up in their uniforms, and everybody's drinking, and we're not drinking. And we're sitting like you guys are sitting right there. You know, everybody's got their wine, and everybody's got their glass, and everybody has wine, even us, but we're not drinking. And all of a sudden, we look at each other across the room, and we give each other the go-ahead. It's okay. We will be just fine. So we pick up that drink, and before we know it, you know, we are picking up everybody else's drink and shugging it down. And it just never occurs to me. And to tell you the truth, after that occasion, I never again thought that I needed to put down the drink, that we had a problem, or that I had a problem with alcohol. So fast forward to a little bit before I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was about 6 years ago. You know, life starts to get really difficult because all that time, you know, that chapter that the gentleman read, and more about alcoholism, it just explains, you know, what, to me it was easy. Once I read that, it was just like, oh shoot, you know, this is what I've been doing. Because not only that was that my purpose, to control my drinking, you know, always, it was like I always got the feedback from people, especially my husband at the time, that he would say, oh, Raquel, she's a social drinker, you know. She's not like me, she doesn't drink like me. But the truth is that when I was around him, I would become the babysitter, you know, and I would be kind of keeping it a little bit down. But whenever he was not around, I would just really cut loose, you know, because then I could enjoy my drinking. When I was around him, I was not only babysitting him, but I was pissed. You know, I would get pissed that he was having that fun and that my part was getting ruined. But so that's the role that I played. What I did not realize is that I was changing my method of drinking. You know, I wasn't just drinking beer anymore, but I was drinking wine, then I was drinking, you know, the hard alcohol, the tequila and the vodka that I kept stored in the freezer, you know, and the wine bottles were stored under the, you know, the sink, and they were tossed, you know, before he would come home on the weekends, because on that time, prior to coming in here, he was working 3 hours away, and he was coming home on the weekends sometimes. And so I would just, you know, I would go to different stores around town, because I did not want to go to the ones where my church people might, you know, see me buying liquor. And so so I play that game. And all along, you know, he was drinking that much, I was drinking that much. But it was increasing, you know. I was increasing my drinking. So when I finally start to see again, you know, that it's getting bad, and I keep telling him, because he's going to get ready to come home, and I said, you know, you might want to take care of this before you come back to live with us, because this is just getting a little bit crazy. And so it's not sitting well with him. But I keep drinking. Mm-hmm. And but it starts to get really bad, because at this point, it's not just him that is being affected, but my children are also drinking. They're a little bit older, and other stuff, and it really freaks me out. I go to the library, and I find a book, and it's called The Selfish Brain, and it's about this big, and in this book, it talks about Alcoholics Anonymous as being the solution. I just remember something pivotal. but then there's a chapter about Al-Anon that I can completely relate to. So I decide, and in this chapter it says to me that if a family member does not seek out recovery, the alcoholic in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous will get better before the family member gets better. Or the family member will just stay sick unless they get recovery too. So I thought to myself, well, shoot, there's no way I'm going to let this guy get better than I am. So I decided to go to Al-Anon. But I had forgotten that a few years prior to being in this place, my husband had gone to Alcoholics Anonymous. In that time, he brought me the big book, and he brought me the chapter to the wives. And I read that chapter, and I'm like, this is so crazy. I was pissed, because I'm supposed to be nice to this guy? Like, how dare? And that's all I remember. That's all I remember from that chapter. So I just grabbed the book and I just gave it to him. And so my drinking increased tremendously. And that was a big shift there, because I said, you go ahead, buddy, and you get better. I don't have a problem. I am okay. Mind you, I was a raging lunatic. I was coming home from work drunk. I was driven home drunk. It was not good. I mean, my alcoholism took off even more during that time. So when I read that chapter, it just really did not dawn on me that he had been in AA before. And so I go to Al-Anon, and I get this sponsor that has a sponsor that says that if I'm going to be part of that little group, that I need to quit drinking, because why would I be wanting to put poison in me that was killing my family? So, I want to do the right thing. I want to get better. Never really thinking about my husband needing to get better anymore. So I quit drinking. And things have really escalated. He started going to AA again. And I stayed in Al-Anon until I started to get irritable and restless and discontent, and I'm losing my mind. I don't know what's going on, and I'm not drinking, and I'm feeling very sick. I can't sleep at night. I'm going crazy, and. And I go to the doctor and I tell her, hey, I think I'm having some problems. I think I might be menopausal. And so she reads me, the questionnaire, and she's like, there's no, you're not. She says, well, I can't sleep. And I'm thinking that sleep is the only thing that is just making me so tired and sick. So she gives me sleeping pills. And Ambien, and I go home, and I take that little pill, and it was just magic. I just lay in bed getting ready to read, and all of a sudden just like, it's time to sleep. And just like that, blacked out, went to sleep, woke up the next day, was like, I was so excited that I finally had this little thing. But I also knew that they were habitual and that I just really needed to watch it. So life at home was really miserable, because there was a lot of chaos. There's a lot of sick people, And the things that I don't know is that I have no tools to relate to others. I have no ability to be understanding and compassionate, and see that they could, I'm miserable, and I just don't know how to change that. and I wanted to change. So I kept, you know, everything is going crazy at home. And my goal every day was, okay, you just gotta get through until you go to bed and you take that pill again and you go to sleep. And so at this time, the little prophecy that book talked about, that the alcoholic will get better. So I start to see that he's getting a little bit better and I'm getting sicker. And I just, it gets maddening. And I start to go to AA. And I start to hear what you guys have to say. And I had gone before to a couple of meetings when I was still the Al-Anon. And all I could hear was like, blah, 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 blah. You know, that the Charlie Brown parents, the teacher environment. And so this time I'm just like, I sat down and I could hear my story by what you were telling. And but I kept going home and taking the pill at night. And I kept going to meetings, you know, and I kept getting sicker. And there was this something happening, and I just didn't know what was going on. And one time I sat down, and this is like the night before I finally pick up my white chip, is I grabbed the big book and I read that chapter on acceptance. And I start, you know, I read the whole chapter, and where the guy is talking about, you know, him and his wife going to the psych ward, and that he wants to put her in the psych ward, and he is the one that ends up in there. And I thought, oh shit, like that's me. Like I am gonna end up in the psych ward because I recognized the first time where I had the DTs and I went into the psychosis and deliriums. Like everything made sense. And at this point, I just know, you know, I just know that I am an alcoholic and that I know where I need to go because you guys have the solution for me. So, you know, I get on my knees and I just ask that simple, you know, prayer, help me, God, you know, because I am just, I'm falling apart, and I could feel it. Like, I could feel it running through my body. I could feel my head, and I'm falling apart. So I do pick up my white chip, and thank God, you know, because I needed you guys to help me get through everything else that has taken place, you know, because my life did not get instantly better. I now know that it doesn't for most of the people here, but I really wanted that. I thought, you know, you guys had the magic and I was going to get better right away, and I did not anticipate all the changes and all the things that were going to take place throughout. So I had heard somebody tell me before that it would get worse before it gets better, and until I experienced that, I could say, yes, that is true. So a lot of things happened during the first 3 years. And I thought I was doing the steps. You know, I had a sponsor that I kind of started withdrawing from, a couple of them actually. And, but I started, I mean, I kept showing up to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did my 90 and 90, and more. Like I was going insane, and I stayed with you guys like two times, three times a day. I would go to meetings for about a year, for 2 years. And right at the beginning, my husband at the time decided that, you know, it was time for him to go, and he left. So that was within 3 months of my sobriety, and that about, you know, knocked me out of my, you know, I was already crazy as it was. So that just kind of made it, you know, put me on top. So, you know, all the things that they tell you not to do besides going to meetings and getting a sponsor and working the steps, I think I did that to the best of my ability at the time. but I just didn't listen to a couple other things, and I got into a relationship right away after my husband left, you know, thinking that this person in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, he sounded good. And you know, in my eyes, at 3 months of sobriety, he looked good. Oh my gosh. I thought, you know, this guy, you know, like he talked about, you know, and I really have a heart for him. And he talked about, you know, how his life had gotten better, you know, and his life has been, you know, had been destroyed to the ground. And you know, he really talked, and I really liked what he had to say. And I said, like, I really want, you know, I want somebody like that. I didn't know, you know, that I just was not in the position to be hanging around with somebody when my husband had just left, and I was going crazy. My behaviors became crazier. I had heard this woman at a women's meeting talk one time, and she said that her first couple of years of sobriety were as of somebody that had just came out of a 100-year prison term. And I remember listening to her, and she was saying some of the things that she was doing, and I thought, like, yep. And I could recognize that, and I knew that I was doing some of that, but it was just kind of like, you know, when you know that alcohol is kicking your butt and you just kind of keep picking it up and you forget, and I just kept doing the same thing, you know. So a few more things happened, and one of my sponsors finally had it with me, and she fired me. And I said, fine, that's fine. And things got a little bit heavier. And I came to that place in my sobriety where I wasn't drinking, but I knew that I did not have what you guys had been doing, you know, the steps and the order that were described in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to hear that message of, you cannot give what you don't have. And, you know, and I started questioning those things. You know, what is it that I don't have? And do I have a sponsor who has taken me through the steps in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because these people that talk about this, they sound like they got it. And so I really, you know, I came to that place where I had to do that moment of surrender, and really I was driving down that car with a lot of pain in my heart, and knowing that if I didn't do something again, that I was gonna once again end up drinking or ending up in the psych ward. So I prayed about this. I made a list of the women that I was gonna ask. And this time I was going to ask directly of, you know, do you take a sponsee through the big book? And that was my goal. And that's what I wanted. So I did. I went to the first woman, and she said, you know, I cannot take you right now. I have too many responsibilities already. And later I found out that she does not take the people through the big book, you know? And so the second person that I approached, she told me, you know, meet me at this place at this time. And I did. And she was prepared, you know? She had the big book with her, and she showed me how she had gone through it. And I, at this time, I felt very at ease and assure that, you know, this time I was going to do something different, and that my hope and my goal was that, you know, to get out of the place that I had been. And And I have been serious about my program. I just, I was not at that time with everything that was happening in my life. I was not ready to listen to the message of that is in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the pages. So she took me through the steps in a very slow, simple, way. And we went through the first step, and it took us a few months to get through that, because there is a lot in that, and I needed to be convinced and smashed, repeatedly out of my head that I am not a normal drinker, that I am maladjusted to life, and that I'm selfish, self-centered, and that and I am going to need the help of God to get me through this. Now, I did believe in God prior to this, and I believe that I had done what I could, in my faith, but I just did not realize how rebellious and how self-sufficient and dependent I was on myself and self-will. And so it came to be to that, took me to that place where I needed to start looking and, what is it that God wants for me? And am I doing God's will in my life today? So, we did the second step and we did the third step prayer. And, we got on our knees and I prayed, I prayed earnestly that prayer. Went through the fourth step. How am I doing with time? So the fourth step, it was a little bit hard, because there was a lot of anger that I still had, and it had a lot to do more with my ex-husband leaving just completely taking off. And I had a lot of that stuff in me. And when I went through the columns, I could see, what my behavior was, but I was still angry. I said pissed off. I was full of rage when I went through that process because, to me, the way that I was looking is I finally got to see how easily I gave my power away, and how easily I was just, not any ability to take care of myself and not any ability to stand up, for some different choices. And I did something that, although at that time was the answer for me, I do have to make amends for that still. So I did not pick up the phone and, scream my head off to him. And I did not in any other way harm him that way. But what I ended up doing, I had so much rage pent up in me that I really thought that I needed to put that somewhere. And I did it. I took some pictures that belonged to him and I tore them up. I tore them up because I was so angry at him, and this is the only way that I felt that I could, that I needed to let that out. And I did, That stuff that was just so bottled up in here, it came out. I know today that it wasn't the best way, it wasn't the right way, and that I have to make amends for that. I'm still working on that amends step in that particular area, and for that I am seeking help, outside help. The big book talks about that, and I finally recognized that the only way that this was going to be possible for me to do is if I went out and found, now that I cannot see and own my part, but how and when can I communicate it without affecting somebody else? you know, and how is it going to affect my sobriety also? So at this point, it's being worked out. You know, and God is preparing that time for me to be able to do that, you know, and have peace and have more compassion and love for this person. You know, something that I do not have, because all along, you know, one of the things that I recognize more and more even today is that when all this was happening and, you know, that he was suffering just like I was suffering, I did not have the ability to have empathy or care for him and to be able to see that he too was another suffering alcoholic just like I am. So when I went through the fourth step, I was able to clearly see that, you know, to start learning how to pray for forgiveness and to understand that just, you know, he's just another sick person and just as I am, and for God to help me do his will and not mine, and how I behave and how I react and how I live my life today. It's a lot simpler and a lot easier than what it used to be. Today, I love the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can tell you that I love coming in here right from the very beginning. You people taught me how to love, you know, unselfishly, and to just give of myself freely without waiting for anything in return. And my life is simple. I work a very simple job, and that frees me a lot of time. And I spend a little bit of time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I do about five meetings a week. And I do dedicate a time to a sponsee. I go to the rehab center and, you know, talk to other people that are there. I still talk to my sponsor. Right now, I'm talking to her more every day. At the beginning, I was talking to her every day, but, you know, things get a little bit softer. And so I don't need to be on the phone with her as much, but right now I have a suffering alcoholic living with me, you know, one of my children, and he wants to go to detox. And in the meantime, you know, I'm extending the help to him that you guys taught me how to help. Because in the past, I have kicked him out of the house, you know. In the past, I did not care to see how affected he was by this disease. And so you guys have taught me how to do that. And I'm just very grateful. I'm very grateful for Steve for asking me to come and speak. I didn't think I was going to make it. We were stuck in traffic. And I thought, oh, yeah, good. And once we got through the traffic, it was like, oh, you'll be there in 10 minutes. Like, anyways, thank you for listening, and thank you for being here. I'm done for today. Oh.